Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alrighty, rock and rolling. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll head out to the guest line right now and talk to one of our favorite people when it comes to college football, and that's Greg McElroy. You can hear him on Jocks FM in the morning, and then you can see him on your TV everywhere, SEC Network, ESPN, ABC, doing all the analysis and calling all the big games, and he's kind enough to join us right now. Greg, appreciate the time. How you been?
Good, man. Appreciate you having me. Big week for college football.
Yeah, I didn't think my first question to you would be something other than Alabama and Georgia related, but this Matthew Sluka story is really crazy. It's a he said, he said type of situation, but it looks like right now he was promised something in terms of NIL from UNLV, and I guess he wasn't getting those payments, and now he's going to redshirt and sit out the season. So as a former college quarterback who didn't play in the NIL era, though, how do you kind of process this crazy one?
Well, I think it'd be nice to kind of get transparency. You know, that's the key. I feel like this is all right now. He said, she said. Matthew Sluka's dad is out there saying that he wasn't paid. They're saying that his living expenses weren't covered. Meanwhile, sources within the UNLV program say that every single payment was met and that Matthew demanded more money after the bye week and the win against Kansas. So, I don't know how to see it. I know it's not ever a good look in college football to see things like this going down. It deflects attention away from the sport, and there's a lot of great stories in the sport. But I don't know who to believe. I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not. All I know is that leaving after four games is never a good look, and not necessarily fulfilling payments if there were obligations made and they weren't. That's not a good look either. So I feel like this all could end pretty quickly. All you have to do, if you're the Sluka family, you just have to say, hey, look, here's the bank statement right here, right in front of you. No money coming in, and we'd be good. And if you're UNLV and you're trying to prove your side of the equation, all right, here's the bank statement. Here's the money that was entered into your account via direct deposit from our collective, and you're good. So I feel like this could all be cleaned up pretty quickly, and I don't feel like it should be that difficult to just present some evidence of whether there was wrongdoing or whether or not thing was on the up and up.
What needs to change in college football? Obviously, I'm all in favor of players getting paid, but it's the wild, wild west on both sides, and there's really no governing body here that could really control this system.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has a problem with players being paid. I mean, if you do, then you need to look in the mirror. Like, it's just not a big deal. Like, you know, I think if anyone were to have a problem with players being paid, it'd be us as former players that didn't get paid, you know, like we did it, you know, a certain way. Like, I don't care. Like, the world's changed. And guess what? Like, my kids have to wear seatbelts and my parents didn't have to. Like, things change. Like, things adjust in the world and rules change and things like that. And it's great that they can now hopefully get a head start financially for having played college football. It's awesome. What I would also say to this is it's pretty simple, I think, but we need to figure out who's going to police what's going on. If you can get transparency in what these guys are getting, that'd be huge. Like, nobody, it's not like there's a mystery how much Joe Burrow's making by the Cincinnati Bengals. There's not a mystery about the Herbert contract extension with the Chargers or what Trevor Lawrence is making with the Jaguars. Like, everybody knows what they're making. And right now it's basically a website that says what your NIL value is, And most of the time that website is pretty significantly inflated. So I don't know what to make of it. I know that it's pay for play, which I'm fine with, but I also think it'd be helpful to know what the market demands are for said position, because it'd be impossible for CeeDee Lamb to go to the table and demand money from Jerry Jones if he didn't know what the next highest paid wide receiver was. So I think transparency would be huge. You also have to figure out who's going to enforce it. Is it the conference level? Is there going to be some type of national body outside of the NCAA that enforces it? And then I think you need to do a really good job of cracking down on people that are misleading the player. That might be teams in some cases, where they are enticing a player through a third party to enter the portal so that they can transfer. We call it tampering. Obviously, it's a huge penalty in the NFL. It should be in college as well. And then we also need to make sure that there are extra layers that the representation has to go through, the agents, to make sure that they are capable and qualified of representing players. Because right now, there's a lot of guys that have no qualifications that are bad actors and that are trying to get their cut when they aren't necessarily always operating on the player's best interest. So that's also an issue as well.
Greg McElroy here with us. Get into Alabama, Georgia. Both teams are on a bye week leading into this one. I'll take you back to the last time we saw Georgia. They only won the football game by 1 point up against Kentucky. Hey, that happens even with all great teams. But did you see some concerns from that game that are maybe a bigger issue for the Georgia program moving forward?
Concerns is probably not the right word to use. I think that there are things that are very much a work in progress. I'm not worried about it because it hasn't become a trend yet. You know, I think a concern is when it happens once and then it happens again and then it happens again. At this point, they're all kind of, it's the anomaly performance. So I wouldn't go as far as to say I'm concerned just yet, but I do think that there are areas where they can grow mightily. I don't think the protection has been super elite this year. Along the offensive line, they're going to be without one of their best players, their right guard, Tate Ratledge. He got hurt in the Kentucky game. I think Carson Beck has missed more throws and missed more opportunities this year than I can remember down the stretch in 23. So that's of concern. There were a couple times in the Kentucky game where guys were running open and he just didn't cut it loose. He was maybe seeing ghosts, or maybe was a little fooled by the coverage and what they did pre-snap and what they ended up in post-snap. But there were guys open and he didn't cut it loose. So that's of concern. But ultimately, I look at that game too, and there was a moment down the stretch where Georgia's back was against the wall. They were up one, playing 4-minute offense, try to take the air out of the football, and they decided to call heavy play action and rip a corner into a really tight window, and Carson Beck made that throw look really easy. So with the game on the line, after you've played really poorly for 55 minutes, to pull off that throw, I'm not so worried about Carson Beck. Like, he's going to be fine. And then defensively, they were a little banged up along the defensive line. So if they can get healthy, that'll be huge. But I do think their depth was challenged against Tennessee more so than it's been in recent years.
Which quarterback, I know both have pressure on them, but between Jalen Milroe and then also Carson Beck for Saturday's contest, which quarterback do you think has more pressure on them?
Probably Carson Beck, more pressure. One, it's on the road. Two, they lost to Alabama last year, so this has been one, you know, that's been circled all offseason. Three, I think he has more to lose. I mean, Carson Beck was the odds-on favorite to be the number one overall pick in the 2025 draft, whereas Jalen, at this point, I don't know what his draft prospects are. I think Kuiper had him as, like, the number five quarterback. I don't know where that lands you. But I think Carson Beck is number one, and in all likelihood, a top two pick in next year's draft, depending on who comes off the board and who's picking first. So it's going to be very interesting, I think, to watch Carson Beck to respond to some adversity, because he did not have many challenges last year. He played pretty dang well pretty much all season. And then the one game they didn't play very well was against Bama, but they had 2-3 weeks to regroup before they played Florida State in the bowl game. So this is kind of an immediate bounce back off the bye week after a poor performance. So it's a little bit shorter, but I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to see the best version of Carson Beck on Saturday.
When we look at this game, Greg McElroy, I actually had Georgia against Alabama in the national championship game. I was higher than most on Alabama going into this year, which is bizarre to say, but now we're in the post-Saban era. But for Saturday, I kind of feel like Alabama's going to win the game and then Georgia will get their revenge later in the season. Where are you at on this one right now?
Yeah, I lean Bama. It's in large part due to a few things. One, I think Bama's a really dynamic offense. I think they're a little more balanced than Georgia. Georgia's a really a pass-first attack. I think they have good backs, but they're a little bit more one-dimensional. Bama, with their quarterback run, complemented with big plays, makes them, I think, a little bit tougher to defend at this point. I'm still not sure at this point for Georgia, like, who's the go-to guy in the passing game. There have been moments where you think it's a guy and then it's not. And I think they are missing Brock Bowers a little bit, that weapon that would really win any matchup and that could take over the game at any moment. And then defensively, we've already talked a little bit about some of the question marks along the defensive line. I think Bama's better along the offensive line. So I think Bama just has a bunch of advantages in this game. I still think it'll go down the wire, and I expect it to be pretty high scoring because Bama does have some youth in the secondary and some inexperience back there. So I expect Carson Beck to get his and to create a couple big plays. But in what I think is a high scoring game, I lean towards the home team, and that would be the Tide.
Before we let you run, just a few more quick hitters with Greg McElroy. Who do you think is a better team? Because both of these teams have impressed the first few weeks of the season. Is it Tennessee or is it Ole Miss?
Tennessee. It's close, I think, on the ceiling. But Tennessee's been challenged. It's hard to kind of gauge where Ole Miss is at right now because they haven't played anybody. Now, this week, they'll play Kentucky, who I think matches up pretty well against Ole Miss. Like, they have good defensive linemen. They have pros. They have first-round picks on this team for Kentucky. So I think they have quality pieces, and this will be really the first opportunity we get to evaluate how much Ole Miss has improved along the line of scrimmage offensively and defensively. They've always had weapons. They've always had quarterbacks. They've always had good perimeter skill, but they haven't always had game-changing defensive and offensive linemen. They feel like they've done that this year. So this will be the first chance to really evaluate that. But I look at it, and you want to go tail the tape. Like, quarterback, I lean Ole Miss heavily right now. I think Jackson Dart's way further ahead than Nico, but that's to be expected. Running back, it's kind of a toss-up. I think Sampson and Henry Parrish are awesome. Wide receiver, I lean slight towards Ole Miss. Slight, though. Very, very slight. Offensive line, I lean towards Tennessee. Defensive line, I lean towards Tennessee. Linebackers, lean towards Tennessee. And then secondary, bit of a toss-up, probably slight lean towards Ole Miss at the moment. So tail of the tape, I think defensively in the front seven, you really like Tennessee. And then offensively with their skill, you really like Ole Miss. So I think it'd actually be a great matchup if they played each other, to be honest with you. I think these teams match up pretty well against each other and be a fascinating showing.
Staying in the SEC, which is still bizarre to say with Texas now in the SEC along with Oklahoma, we've seen a little Arch Manning this year, obviously made his first start last week with Quinn Ewers being banged up. What do you think Arch Manning will become with the hype and then what also you've seen from him in the small doses so far?
Well, I mean, I think he looks pretty he's obviously very talented. We know that. The ball placement's pretty dang good for a freshman. We've seen athleticism that I don't think a lot of people anticipated, but I was not shocked by it. I knew this was a guy that could run if necessary. And I also have seen a guy that's made some freshman mistakes, you know, which, by the way, welcome to college football. It's right. Hard. Like, these guys are good. So those that have said, you know, this guy's going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, I don't know if I'm willing to go that far just yet. I think he has all the tools to become an elite player, but he's still young and we need to treat him as such. And to anticipate him being the best quarterback in the country here, one start into his college career, you're probably going to be a little misled. So I'm glad that Quinn is going to be back at some point here very soon, because I don't think that Arch is 100% ready to be the every down guy for the national championship favorite at the moment. But I do think his time is coming. And man, I don't think many players could play at a real high level as a redshirt freshman. There's just not that many. He hasn't had a lot of game action. So I've been super optimistic with what I've seen. I still think there's things to iron out and things to improve. But so far, it's been, gosh, rock solid BB+ performances from Arch in the last two games.
When we get to Billy Napier at Florida, Greg McElroy, it's not a matter of if he's going to get fired, in my opinion. It's just when. The big question right now around college football: would Lane Kiffin leave Ole Miss for Florida? How do you respond to that if that opportunity presents itself?
I mean, he's making a lot of money. I think his most recent contract got him to $9 million and change, which I'm not sure exactly where that falls on the pecking order of top college football coaches, but I think he's in the top 10. I think Florida's a tricky job, man. Like, I think it's a really good place and you can win big there and the ceiling's crazy high. But along with it comes an expectation that you never lose and you never play bad and you score a lot. So I think the Florida job is a tough one. I mean, I've seen good coaches go there and not win enough to maintain their job status, even though they'd won like 65% of their games. Like, it's a tough spot. So because they don't only they not only expect you to just win, but they expect you to win a certain way by scoring a lot of points and being entertaining in the process. So I think it's a very tough spot to be in. If I were to handicap it, I think it's a 50-50 that he would consider it, but that's lame for you. Like, it was 50-50 with him and Auburn a couple years ago, and he decided at the 11th hour, hey, I'm staying.
A lot of drama, and it will come right down to the end, right?
It always does, like with him. Like, I think he likes to be recruited. I think he likes to be considered. Like, he likes to be in the public eye, but I also think he's really happy in Oxford. So it wouldn't shock me at all if he entertained it all the way to the end and then ultimately decided to stay.
Before I let you run, if your Heisman ballot was due tomorrow, which it's not, I was talking about this the other day, the three names that would be on my ballot would be Travis Hunter, Ashton Jeanty, and Cam Ward in no order. But who would be your three names? Just wondering with what you've seen so far.
Yeah, it's three good ones. Jeanty is awesome at Boise. He is a great player. He is really fun to watch. So he would certainly be in the mix for me. I always like to consider a defensive player, but I'm trying to think if there's one that's really popped this year so far. I don't know if I'd put a defensive player on just yet. I mean, I look at Hunter, and I view him more through the lens of a receiver. I know he's had an interception. I know he's had a forced fumble. I see him more as a receiver than I do as a defensive back. So I guess he could qualify as a defensive player if you looked at him that way. I think he's definitely one of the best players. I don't know if he's going to have enough juice to maintain all the way through the end to be considered amongst the Heisman hopefuls, because I don't think his team's going to win a lot of games moving forward. I mean, they're a two touchdown dog at UCF who, you know, might be a top five team in the Big 12, but I don't know. You know, I don't know where they're going to ultimately end up. So he's a good one that I think will be considered by most. Try to think. I mean, Cam Ward's an obvious one with what he's accomplished already so far. I still wouldn't rule out Jackson Dart at Ole Miss, Carson Beck at Georgia. Milroe's going to be in the mix because the way these things usually go, Zach, like, it's
down to the wire.
It's almost irritating. It's like, who's the most famous player on the best team and has their team in position to win, you know, a national championship? It seldom goes to the best player. It really almost always goes to the quarterback of one of the top six teams. And that might be frustrating for some. That might be cool with others. To me, it's frustrating because I think there's a lot of great players that don't really get a lot of consideration because they don't play for the right team.
He's Greg McElroy. Greg, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for the insight.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.